We head down under now to talk to Professor Ashley Ward about animal societies. And in these times of lockdown, we find out why animals are particularly social. Good to talk to you, Ashley. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Bill, and good morning to everybody in Europe.
How's it going in lockdown in Australia, Ashley? How's it been for you?
It's been rough. I think it's been rough for an awful lot of people all over the world. I think from an Australian perspective, it hasn't been quite as bad here as you've suffered over there in Europe, which is probably, I guess, largely to do with the fact that this is an island nation. So there's more control on borders. I'm not sure, but it's been a tough time. Hopefully we can see the light at the end of the tunnel now.
Yeah, there's particular praise for how New Zealand have handled this. Is that the kind of general feeling in Australia as well?
Absolutely, yeah. I think quite a few people are looking to New Zealand as the example. And hopefully we're all, you know, each country is hoping that we can follow the same trajectory.
Now, it's not an Aussie accent I detect there. You grew up in the UK, I think, didn't you? And worked in Leeds and Leicester before you moved out.
That's exactly right, yeah. I don't have the Australian accent, regrettably, but yeah, I grew up in Leeds, so there's still a bit of a Yorkshire twang there. And I moved down here 13 years ago to follow my career.
Fantastic.
But yeah, it still sounds very much the Yorkshire lad that I was and am.
Do you still manage to get Yorkshire tea shipped out to you or not?
We do. It's a big seller here.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, it's a popular brand. Yeah. Well, there's some terrible stuff on offer, but the Yorkshire tea eclipses it naturally.
Delighted to hear it. Now, as we sit here in lockdown, your topic, animal society, is particularly interesting. This because it's about how animals basically stick together and band together into groups, and that's kind of been your life's work, really, looking at this, hasn't it?
Exactly, yeah. And during the process of writing this book, I mean, I was also trying to draw comparisons, I guess, with humans. You know, we've built this fantastic civilization. But what few people actually realize is that that's a relatively new thing. I mean, it sounds a long time, but it's about 10,000 years since the Neolithic Revolution, which was the time essentially when we started to live together in large aggregations. Before that, we were hunter-gatherers in small groups. Mm. So in 10,000 years, we've come an awful long way. So we tend to think of ourselves as the consummate social animal. And yet we've got so many different ways where animals have kind of gone before us and also have some very, very clear comparisons to our own societies. That's exactly right.
How interesting. And of course, one would hope that there are benefits to sociality, but interacting with other individuals is basically inherently dangerous, I guess, isn't it?
It can be. As with so many things, sociality is a mix of the good and the bad. But on average, it is a strongly positive force. So, I mean, one statistic which really struck me, which was not some of my own research, but some that I came across in the course of writing this book, is that having a strong social network and interacting regularly, this is people, interacting regularly with a decent social circle is a better predictor of longevity than physical activity.
So, wow.
For those people who are not going to the gym just now, please do stay in touch with your friends and family. It's incredibly important, although we undervalue it perhaps sometimes.
That's interesting. And does the interaction, of course, now we can't have the actual physical interaction, so is it enough to have a kind of verbal interaction with people?
Yeah, I think any kind of interaction is better than no kind of no interaction at all. Absolutely. I mean, it doesn't have to be physical contact, but maintaining that kind of social connection between people is fundamentally important. That's right.
As far as the animal world goes, and I guess there are goods and bads in this. When I watch ants, for example, patrolling my balcony and you know, all working together in lines and carrying stuff back to the nest, I think that's actually brilliant. But then I think, well, not quite so good if you're a lemming.
Well, you know, the lemming story is an interesting one because it reveals a rather darker side to Walt Disney. In the making of a film called White Wilderness,
yeah,
the Disney studios rounded up a load of lemmings. They were caught by children up in the Canadian Arctic, flown down to where they were filming, and then herded off a cliff. Lemmings don't actually do that.
It was
entirely staged.
Oh, my goodness. They've been hard done by all this time.
Yeah, they were just chased off that particular, into that particular body of water. They had very little say in it, the poor thing.
Goodness me. Wow, dear. I'll never look at a lemming in the same way again. Now, let's have a look at some of the reasons why animals would stick together. What's some of the typical reasons why, the benefits?
There's also, well, it depends on the species, but right. there's a few key things which go right across, I guess, all kinds of animals, from tiny little krill and ants all the way up to people. And of course, including on the way all the kinds of mammals that we're familiar with. One is protection from predators. It doesn't apply so much, fortunately, to humans, but lots of animals who live in groups get a benefit of early warning if a predator's coming along
yeah.
or get a little bit of information about what a predator might be up to. But there's something that's really important for particularly vertebrate animals, so that's everything from fish upwards, and including ourselves, something called social buffering.
Right.
So that's essentially where the mere presence of another animal of your own species provides an incredible calming effect on an animal.
Oh.
It's been studied in all kinds of different animals. So we see it in, for instance, fish, certainly, rats, cattle, sheep, to the extent that even the picture, and this is going to sound insane, but I promise you it's true, even the picture of a familiar sheep calms a live sheep down. You can have a photograph of one of its friends. They can recognize up to 50 different individuals from photographs alone.
How incredible.
So if they've got a... yeah, so if you need to isolate a sheep and you're worried about its well-being, then a picture goes some way just to calm that animal.
I know a few human beings that are behaving like sheep at the moment. I'll maybe just show them some pictures. Now, one of the other ones, I guess, must be mating. I mean, if you're going to sit as a human, if you sit inside alone, you're hardly ever going to likely find a life mate. But if you pop off to the local disco, then there's more of a chance, I reckon.
Well, that's true. I think that whole sort of thing has been undercut somewhat by Tinder. But yeah. At the same time, if you're living in a group, not only does it give you the opportunity to find your partner, but unfortunately, it also very likely includes a rival for that partner. So, again, it's the rough with the smooth. You know, there's going to be a love rival as well as the love of your life in close proximity to you.
Yeah, good point. And what about the animals that migrate in flocks or herds? That's quite extraordinary to see. And some of them go ridiculous distances together.
That's one of the most interesting things. That's one thing I dwell on in the book, actually. So there's something known as the wisdom of the crowd, also known as swarm intelligence.
Yes.
And essentially, it's the way in which a group of animals or a group of people, if they can combine their individual estimates of something, they can achieve as a group incredible accuracy. So you might see it with birds that are all flying in a flock over a long distance. Each of them might be just very slightly out in their reckoning. But if they can integrate the information that comes from all the other members of the flock, then they become vastly more accurate at finding their way to wherever they need to go.
Interesting.
They don't solely rely on that, of course. That would be foolish. They do individually navigate, but they also kind of swap information. So it is incredibly important for that as well.
It's incredible to watch a swarm of, a flock of birds, like swallows, who are able to turn on a knife edge all simultaneously. And you say the same thing with shoals of fish. How is that happening?
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
When
you look at that thing, when you see it, it's one of the most arresting and spellbinding sights in the whole of nature, I think.
It
just seems incredible. And actually, that was one area that my own group has been working on for a few years now. So it seemed, and in fact, people thought 100 years ago or so, that the animals in those groups were tapping into some kind of collective consciousness.
Yes.
That they were all sort of reading from some kind of script somehow of what to do.
Yeah.
What's actually happening is much simpler, but to my mind, equally beautiful. They're obeying some very simple rules. It's actually a series of three rules, which is effectively, if I'm too near to my nearest neighbor, move apart. If I'm too far from my nearest neighbor, move together. And if I'm a perfect kind of Goldilocks distance from my nearest neighbor, then copy what that neighbor does.
Amazing.
And actually, it's so effective that when Nissan were building robotic cars, they used some of the rules that we worked out for fish and which other groups had worked out for fish to program those cars, because the animals have been doing this perfectly for millions of years. And if the robotic cars could move in a similar way, I don't mean twisting and turning,
yeah,
but maintaining a good distance, then that would solve an awful lot of traffic problems.
How wonderful. And when we're talking of herds, one of the phrases which has popped up for all the wrong reasons, maybe in the United Kingdom, certainly, is the phrase herd immunity. The idea that if you're all together, then you become immune as a group. Is that a thing in animals?
Absolutely is, yeah. They have very similar immune systems to us, especially mammals. So essentially, it does... These effects do go through the entire group, and ultimately, the end of it, they're all stronger for it. The only problem, of course, is that it's not without cost; it's not without casualties. So yeah. it's a good thing, but it's not universally good.
How interesting! I was talking about fish there, and down here we're lucky enough to have dolphins swimming in the Med, and I've seen them many, many times, yeah. And it's an extraordinary thing to watch. They are very social animals, aren't they? They seem to kind of stick together, have fun together, talk together. Is that fair?
It absolutely is fair, yes. So bottlenose dolphins in particular have been studied particularly well, and they produce what's known as a signature whistle, which is essentially... It's extrapolating somewhat, but it's essentially like their own name. Each dolphin has its own individual signature whistle, which it can call out and allow others to identify it. And there are instances where if they're at some distance from another individual, they'll call out that other individual's signature whistle, which is pretty amazing. Dolphins communicate in all sorts of different ways as well. So if a dolphin calf strays off away from its mother as it's perhaps approaching independence or is just being a little bit sneaky, then when its mother rounds it up, she tells it off. And you can't imagine this perhaps, but what the mother does is she holds her nose to the flank of the calf and buzzes, makes a loud buzzing noise to tell it off. So they really do communicate beautifully, dolphins, actually. Yeah, they're a remarkably intelligent animal.
Oh, if only my mum had buzzed in my ear rather than clipping me round it when I'd done something wrong, that would have been a far easier life, I tell you. And finally, I guess, what's the opposite of all this then, Ashley, both in humans and in animals? What about the people who don't want to be part of the herd? They don't want to be together and they want to be isolated. Is that a good thing? Do the group turn on them?
It varies from person to person, of course, but I mean, solitary confinement is one of the most feared punishments in the entire judicial system.
Yeah.
To the extent that in most civilized countries, it's regarded as torture and is completely illegal.
Sure.
So extended isolation is a terrible thing. You even see it in animals, actually. So if you were to take a herring out of a shoal, herring are animals which live in their shoal their entire lives.
Yep.
If you isolate a herring, it essentially dies of loneliness.
Oh,
you might think that sounds a little bit like an overstated claim, but the stress of not being near their own kind essentially kills them.
Goodness
The same even with tiny little krill down in Antarctica. If they're isolated from a swarm, because they're transparent, you can see their little hearts, and their hearts speed up if they're isolated. It's for all social animals, being on their own for any extended period of time is a stressful thing.
And if they are on their own for whatever reason, maybe they've run off because there's danger and they've got lost and they're separated from the herd.
Yep.
Do animals have we obviously would just pick up the mobile phone and say, where are you? And we'd look on our sat-nav and that would all be fine. But how do animals get back to the herd?
It's a good question. So I guess they would follow environmental gradients. So we have very, very little sense of smell, but a lot of animals have exquisite senses of smell, and they can pick up kind of chemical gradients which will tell them which way to go. Or they could listen out, or they'll wander about just looking for them. But sooner or later, they will resume contact with their group. A lost social animal is also a social animal that is looking for its friends, you can be pretty sure.
How interesting. Well, what a great subject for now. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, Ashley. The book is Animal Societies. It's also actually in audible form, but you can get the book on our website, tre.radio. You can find it there and save you looking around the internet for it. Ashley, you take care of yourself in Australia. Good to talk to you. You keep up drinking that Yorkshire tea. I've got a cup on the go as we speak, actually. You'd be delighted to hear.
Thank you very much, Bill. Lovely to
All
talk
right,
to you.
All right, only you. Take care. Bye-bye.